realfaith.org.au.
You get in thinking, oh yeah, I'll do this, it's okay. There's a driving instructor there, and then when you're going at 120k knowing that your blind daughter is driving you, you're thinking, stop, I want to get off.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Well, today, once again, we'll learn more about what it's like to go through life without being able to see. Kim Black was born blind and she joins us once again along with her mother, Sue, to share more about her life journey and some of the unique challenges she faces on an everyday basis. At this point in the conversation, she's chatting about the time she traveled alone to the UK. Now, if I went to the UK, I would go see Big Ben and all the tourist things, but I'm wondering, would that be of any interest to you?
Oh, absolutely. I think partly just for the sake of saying you've been, but there's always something to appreciate. You know, I went to St. Paul's Cathedral in London with one of my aunties, and it was very ornately decorated, and I was, you know, there were definitely things that I could touch and things that were described to me and that sort of thing. You sort of get a sense of the atmosphere around you and watching people's reactions and hearing the way they talk, you know. You do definitely miss out on the visuals, and that can be hard, but it can be great just for understanding the history and, you know, what's actually there.
So you went, quote unquote, sightseeing.
You betcha. You just do it in an entirely different way.
Yeah, yeah. Fascinating. What about movies?
I enjoy the movies.
So are there movies that describe what's happening on the screen?
Yeah. Nowadays in cinemas, there are showings where they've got like audio description, and you get like this kind of radio thing before the movie starts, and you've got a pair of headphones, and it'll actually describe what's happening as the movie's playing.
So when somebody's saying, hey, the latest movie is Star Wars or whatever,
then I would go and say it with them, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So now getting back to the UK, any other adventures there?
The whole thing was just an adventure, really. Like,
yeah. By yourself. That's the part myself. I can't get over. By yourself.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't think if somebody put a blindfold on me and said, go find my car in a car park.
Yeah. Look, I think getting lost is kind of scary, though it is. It's part of the fun. It's a good way to meet
part
people.
Part of the fun?
Well, yeah.
Well, that's a nice way of looking at it.
It can be part of it. You can find things and people that you might never have come across.
Things and people. Well, what would be an example of this?
Oh, like, you know, it could even be something like, oh, I've turned up the wrong street, but there's a really nice restaurant there that I didn't know about. I might go and try that out, you know, like, or it might be that, you know, I have had situations. I remember this was in Australia coming home from school one day and I accidentally caught the wrong bus or was about to get on the wrong bus, and someone who I'd never spoken to in class but was one of my classmates came up to offer help, and it actually led to a really good friendship.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Because they could see you were going to be in trouble if you got on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they came up to you and helped you.
They came up and helped, and consequently meant like, oh, you know, we're obviously catching the same bus, so we chatted on the way home, and next thing it kind of led to a friend request on Facebook and, you know, quite a good friendship.
Yeah.
Formed after that. So
okay, now you mentioned Facebook. I know that you live on your phone practically. It is
my lifeline. It's a bit sad, really,
but the way it works is it's all audio.
Yeah, so like with my computer, my phone's got a talking program on it.
Is it fast?
Yeah, it's really fast.
So your ear has picked this up over time.
Yeah,
and it's basically almost unintelligible to me.
Yeah,
but
pretty much.
So you're just kind of, how does it work? You put your finger on the screen and it just says what you're touching?
Yeah, you kind of swipe your finger around and you double tap on something and it opens it. Definitely the prospect of having an iPhone wasn't particularly inviting in the beginning, you know, with a touch screen. And I think I would still prefer to have a phone that's actually got buttons on it. But the Apple technology for someone who's totally blind is absolutely fantastic.
Well, you must be on that phone a lot, because I know when I sent you a friend request, you replied.
Yeah, pretty much straight away.
Probably about 3 seconds.
Probably. Yeah, I'm on it a lot. I sort of joke about it being a lifeline, and I think it's sort of true. Like, you do everything on your phone these days. So, you know, like anyone else, I would use, you know, Google Maps and, you know, send texts and Facebook and, you know, Messenger and
so modern, you know, technology is really helping you be involved in a whole lot of things.
Absolutely, absolutely. Even, you know, for some of the more practical tasks as well, you can actually get, you know, apps on your iPhone that will scan barcodes and tell you what a food product is or something.
Oh, yeah, an app for shopping. You're trying to shop for something. How do you know what's in front of you?
Yeah, obviously online shopping is good there too. But, yeah, just for working through what's in the cupboard. Like, I live with five other people, so there are times where things get moved around. It's inevitable.
Yeah.
And
you
want to
eat some cereal and you accidentally grab, I don't know.
Yeah, I have a recollection of accidentally putting juice on my cereal once growing up.
Your mother's shaking her head. Yeah.
It definitely happened.
So, yeah, that might not taste too well.
No.
So actually knowing what's in it, so your phone would be like an extension of your arm.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. The other thing is I play this game called Swish, which is kind of an adapted version of Table Tennis for the Blind. And
Table Tennis for the Blind?
Yeah.
I have no idea what that would entail.
So the bat's kind of like a paddle, like a flat rounders bat almost. Like, it's kind of rectangular and, yeah, fairly small. And so the table's got sideboards on it. And on top of that rests a big wooden board. They call it the net, but it's obviously not made of net. It's made of wood. And the aim is to hit the ball, which has bells in it, under the net. And you score points by hitting it off the end. So, yeah, I've been involved in quite a few competitions for that over the years as well.
That is fascinating. I definitely have to see the game of Swish, it's called.
Yep.
Now, another thing that I've learned that you do is you have learned to know how big a room is or how to navigate through Echo, or do I have this right?
Yeah.
How does this work?
There's something that I've been taught called echolocation, which is basically by means of the click of your tongue. Yeah, you can use that, the kind of bounce back that comes from that to determine what's happening around you and
okay, can size you of a room. Demonstrate for us?
That's the kind of click.
And based on that, do you know how far the wall is from you right now?
There's one really close, about a meter to my right.
You are exactly right. Although I was told that you have a challenge in this room because there is very little echo because there's carpeting on the walls.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, carpet kind of absorbs the sound, so echolocation isn't the easiest in here, but yeah, definitely, like, for finding, you know, hard, you know, brick walls or metal walls or fences or poles or even staircases, stairs going up, I can detect by use of a click.
Wait a second, you can tell if there is if the stairs are in front of you based on a click?
Yeah, only stairs going up, though. Echolocation doesn't detect a drop-off, so if it's stairs going down, not going to pick that up.
Although I would think knowing if there's stairs going down would be very important.
I've had a few pretty interesting incidences. One of those in the UK, actually. Fell down a flight of stairs and landed on my back, bruised some of the discs, so that was pretty sore.
Oh, wow. But no, normally the cane, I think, would...
I don't use a cane at home, but
oh,
yes.
Oh, okay. So based on the echo, you can tell that there's a stairway going up in front of you.
Yeah.
How does an echo sound that tells you that and it's not a wall?
Well, because of the sound, like as you click, it's bouncing off the stairs. You can tell that it's bouncing back from further away from you with each step that the sound of your click hits. So as the sound, you know, moves up and further away from you, you can tell that it's not just going straight up.
Like a wall.
If it was a wall, it would just go straight up. The sound wouldn't bounce back from further away from me wherever it hit. I know I've seen some pretty amazing echolocation. There's a man in America who that's his profession. He's blind, and he actually teaches blind kids and, well, adults as well, how to get around just using echolocation. Obviously, the use of a cane is still very important. I've often been asked, what would you do, the click or the stick? I think both
the
click or the stick. Yeah, I think both of those things have their purpose, but echolocation is just absolutely brilliant. It's really enabled me to enhance my mobility. So
now, if there's something there to echo, so like if it's a light pole, that would have one kind of an echo, or is there any kind of echo? I'm just thinking I'm walking down the street.
Yeah, well, different surfaces kind of have different sort of sounds. So like a wire fence versus a brick wall is a good example.
Is there any echo from a wire fence?
There is, yeah.
Is there really?
Yeah. But it's obviously quite thin and, you know, yeah. There's holes in it. So, yeah. You know, obviously that's quite different, vastly different from a solid brick wall or a wooden fence. I remember being challenged once to actually walk along a wall and echolocate the drain pipes.
Could you?
Yeah.
So you,
it's pretty hard,
it
but
bounced
I could.
Back, the sound bounced back.
Yeah. I didn't touch the wall. I just used my echo. I was just like,
just okay.
one here, like just as I walked along.
You were able to locate drain pipes just by going, I can't even do
it. Oh, yeah, close enough. Yeah.
I know. How do you make this?
It's kind of the tongue it's like suctions with the roof of your mouth, I guess.
It's yours is a higher pitch. I was just going.
Yeah, I guess obviously, you know, people have different clicks that work for them. Some people just walk along using their fingers.
Oh, really?
And
you think they're just really cool, but they're actually.
Yeah, they're actually clicking. Some people kind of have more of a sort of sound. Other people,
so basically, it's
a sharper click.
It's whatever works for you.
Yeah, personal preference. Some people can even do it just by the noise of their cane or like of their footsteps. You know, the sound from that will bounce back at you.
Yeah.
And some people can manage with that.
I would have to say, when I go for a walk, whether or not the sound I make or is bouncing off anything, it's completely, it's going by me. I'm not even paying attention to this. From now on,
get a blindfold on you. We'll work on your click.
That would be fascinating.
It's like some kind of weird Morse code. I remember being at an echolocation seminar, and one of the things was, let's go around the table and hear everybody's clicks. So,
and were they all different?
Yeah, there were. Some people couldn't do it at all. Some, like me, you know, obviously being quite experienced at it, I had a fairly sharp sort of click, and then there was everything in between, so.
And you've been doing it for how long?
I reckon I first started it when I was maybe about 8 or 9. What started it originally was I was doing some orientation around my new school, and the person who was showing me how to get around was getting me to trail along the wall with my hand. And I turned around and said, I'm not going to do that, I can hear it. And she was kind of like, what? You know?
Now, were you taught this? You just picked this up intuitively?
It was something I was kind of able to do passively, I think. I just knew where the wall was. I could sense it by means of hearing. And, yeah, further research on the part of my instructor led to finding the knowledge of echolocation, and it was just something that she encouraged me to to try out. And so, yeah, from about 9 years old, that was a part of our session. It started off with bigger objects. I remember walking along the wall. And, yeah, she would get me to find the alcoves in the wall and the doors and things. And then as it got small, you know, as I got better, it would be smaller objects that we would look for, poles and things like that.
Wow, that's just amazing. Today we're chatting with Kim Black along with her mother, Sue, about her life as a blind person. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we'll hear more of Kim's interesting insights and how her blindness has actually helped her to grow in her faith. That and more when we return right here on Real Faith.
If this program has highlighted something you'd like prayer for, we'd love to pray for you. Call 1-800-PRAY-FOR-ME. That's 1-800-772-936. It's a free call. Or text 0401-132-888.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and today we're chatting with Kim Black about aspects of her day-to-day life as a blind person. Next, it's her mother Sue's turn to share a few activities we can all do to help us better relate to what life is like not being able to see.
Even when Kim started going to kinder and school, Vision Australia would go around and instruct teachers, and often they would do activities under blindfold. You know, they might have to walk around the room or sit down and eat a meal. Oh, it's just Vision Australia's way of helping, you know, the new environment sort of ease into having a blind person. So they'd often get and things like I remember Kim telling me about, you know, the kids would have to take their shoes off and they'd be put into a pile and they'd have to find their own shoes with a blindfold on, things like that. So they might have to eat their lunch in under blindfold or go for a walk around the yard or something like that. So
as time progressed too, like as I got older and stuff, I'd get to have a greater hand in those sorts of things as well. So students would actually get to hear from me, you know, this is what I need, this is how you can support me. So that was, it was pretty cool. I kind of enjoyed watching them flounder around being all scared.
Now, Sue, have you done any of these activities?
A few of them.
How'd you go?
Okay. The one thing, I mean, you know, getting back to the more serious stuff, the one thing I did find very hard was actually eating under blindfold. It was an activity I didn't want to do, and I still to this day have never done it. Silly things like, you know, whereas before perhaps if you got up in the night, I'd put a light on, I'd start to walk around the house with no light on just to get a bit of a feel, test myself, I guess. Yeah. And I certainly went for a walk around Vision Australia with a sighted guide under blindfold. That was okay. I did that okay. But eating, no. To this day, I haven't eaten under blindfold.
She doesn't let me guide her around. It's very sad, really.
She doesn't let you drive? What is the matter? What kind of a parent are you?
Come on, I could stick my cane out the window. Like,
I think there would be some people on the road that might have a problem with
that. That's fine. And I can go as fast as I like.
She's done that at Sandown. They have a day where they have blind.
Wait, what?
Yeah, they have a day they call it in the driver's seat. It's put on by, I can't remember if it's like the Lions Club.
I hope you're in the middle of some big, big field.
It's actually Sandown
racetrack.
A racetrack?
Yeah.
Have you done this?
Yeah, I've done it a few times. Got up to about 140 kilometres per hour. With mum in the back.
What were you thinking, Sue?
Oh, she's got life insurance, too. So
now, they take you in these cars. Now, I'm hoping that the guy has a brake on his side.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's driving, like if you're doing driving lessons, you know, how they've got an accelerator and a brake. And
I'm feeling a little bit better about this.
It's actually driving instructors are in the passenger seat.
Oh, okay. All right. Do they have a steering wheel as well?
Take control if they need to.
They didn't have a steering wheel, but they always had their hand on the steering wheel while they were steering. I remember once
What is the purpose? I mean, it's just for fun or what?
Just for fun, yeah.
Do you like
it? To give the blind people a sense of what it is to drive, I guess. Yeah. It's great.
I did have a driver who told me to go left instead of right, and he had to put the brake on very quickly when I was about to kind of hit a fence.
Oh.
As
an instructor, they have to know their left from the right pretty good, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Some blind people even tell them to use, like, you know, if you think of the steering wheel as a clock face. So that can give you an idea of how sharp you need to turn, you know, if it's just 1 or 2 o'clock or 4 or 5 o'clock, it's...
Okay.
You know, like if you say 11 o'clock, you're going to turn your wheel slightly to the left. Yep. If it's 2 o'clock, you're going to turn it slightly to the right, you know.
Yeah.
3 o'clock is obviously indication that it's a sharper turn, you know. So some people like the drivers to do it that way. Other people are happy with slight left, slight right, straighten up. Like, yeah, so it can be easy for the instructors, and I've definitely encountered some fairly nervous ones in my time doing that.
So, Sue, what was it like being in a car driven by a blind person?
Scary.
Now that's faith right there.
You get in thinking, oh yeah, I'll do this. It's okay.
I'm
supportive of my daughter. There's a driving instructor there, and then when you're going along the straight, do they call it? Not up on racetrack lingo, but and you're going at 120k, knowing that your blind daughter is driving you. You're thinking, stop! I want to get off.
Now, Kim,
Were
you happy that your mother decided that she trusted you and she got in the car that you were driving?
Oh, it was pretty cool. I can imagine it would have been scary because even me, you know, having driven myself, I've got in the car with my other vision impaired friends and been like, what on earth am I thinking? So I can totally relate to it. It's kind of cool that people are willing to share those sorts of experiences with you. You know, I mean, obviously, well, there was a kind of flicker of what am I doing? You know, Mum knew that there was a driving instructor there who had a break, you know, so there was that kind of reassurance. But, yeah, it would be, well, it is, having done it, you know, been on both sides of it. When you're driving, you're caught up in, woohoo, this is fun. When someone else is driving and they're also blind, you're like, my gosh.
is this a good idea?
Am I crazy?
Yeah, like...
All right. Now, in everyday conversation, we say things like, oh, did you see that movie or did you see such and such? But then I find myself talking to you saying, well, should I say see that or should I say, oh, did you hear that movie? What are your feelings on these kind of wordings?
Look, I'm, you know, it's language, isn't it? It's the way people talk to each other. And, you know, obviously being blind, I've had to be open to the possibility that I see things in an entirely different way. So, just use normal language.
Well, I think that's where we, as parents, when we first found out, we decided, as I said, especially having other children, we made a conscious decision not to change the way we talked because, you know, we had to cater for everyone and Kimberly did see things. It was just in a different way. So instead of saying, have a feel of this, we'd say, have a look at this and, you know, perhaps give it to her in her hand instead of, you know, the way we would have with our children, yeah.
And again, just to reiterate, like I do live in a world that is predominantly sighted and I have to fit into that. And that includes my family as well. Everyone else can see. So, yeah, that is normality. And it's not like I'm being excluded by the fact that people aren't saying hear this instead of watch it, you know. Like we said, it's just seeing things in a different way and experiencing life in a different way. And, yeah, I think... to change what the language you use singles you out in a way that you don't need to be singled out. You're already kind of singled out by your disability itself, and everyone knows about it, so, yeah.
So, I mean, if we were driving along, I would be driving. So if we were driving along, and I said, oh, there, you know, we came across something really interesting, I said, oh, look at this.
Then you would maybe proceed to describe what's out the window that you're pointing out. Oh, we're driving past the most amazing-looking beach, the water's smooth, whatever it might be. And, you know, I'll develop a kind of mental picture of what that might be like.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously you don't kind of get the beauty of looking at it, but you're still including me by saying, oh, you know, there's a really nice beach there, you know.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is to include somebody. And not say, oh, look at this. Oh, no, you can't see. Well,
if you actually change the language you're using, then you're sort of excluding. I know it's always done with good intent, but as I say, it kind of singles you out. So, yeah.
Well, I have to admit, when you come in the studio, I just, without even thinking, I go over and open up the shades. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second.
Again, very selfish. I've told you I don't like having light in here. What are you doing?
So, an assignment for everybody listening today. To be able to better empathize with people who are blind is to have somebody guide you in some activities. Apparently, Sue has not accepted the challenge to eat blindfolded. what are you afraid will happen?
I don't know. It's just on that particular day. It was all quite overwhelming, to be honest with you. And, yeah, that was the last activity. And I was, no, I'm not going to do it. It was all too hard.
So I suppose it's kind of humiliating. Like, for me, like, I actually have to be kind of strategic with what I order. You know, if I'm out at an Italian restaurant, I won't order spaghetti or fettuccine because it's longer, you know, long pasta. You know, I'd rather order something like a penne so that I could just stab it with a fork, you know, so... can be confronting to both eat in public and be seen eating. So, well, I can certainly relate to that one.
Well, that's true. So, I mean, spaghetti, it's noodles. How do you get it on your fork if you can't see it?
With difficulty, mate. I just avoid it.
So you don't eat spaghetti in public?
I can, but I choose not to. Like, something like a penne is easier, or that spiral pasta where you can just stab it with your fork. It's a lot easier to manage.
Blindness so that's is what I would affecting tend to your do. Diet. I'd never even thought about
it. Well,
this.
Look at the size of me.
I will not comment. Look at the size of
me. I've got a great face for radio.
Oh, hey, that's my line.
Yeah, well.
All right. So that's the assignment. Everybody listening today, eat a meal blindfolded or get a guide and go for a walk.
I got to say, I think the guiding one's really a good one because it's a good exercise in trust. You know,
oh, yeah.
Had people say to me before, you're so trusting. And it's kind of like, well, I have to be.
Now, speaking of trust.
It's either be trusting or be independent.
Speaking of trust, has this helped you in your faith life?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, trusting others. And then, you know, there are times where I think even, you know, like, I think there is such thing as a spiritual sight and a spiritual blindness. And, yeah, just being open to where God is leading you is really important. And sometimes you do blindly step out in faith, not knowing what's going to happen next. God works in really mysterious ways. And so, yeah, I guess being blind is kind of an exercise in it in that way. I hadn't really thought of it like that, but yeah, it kind of is.
Thank you so much for sharing, Kim Black, and also your mother, Sue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.